CliffCentral.com.
Look at this. Debbie Droke is here. How are you?
I haven't even given you a hug.
Come on, get up to this mic.
Hi, how's everybody?
Good, how are you?
It feels great. I'm not in my living room.
I know.
Imagining seeing you all, you know?
Usually when we talk to you, it's on Skype. And you know, the funny thing is you've got like a better Skype line than people who are 500 meters from here.
I know. Sometimes it's like you're right in my living room.
I know. How's the family?
Yeah. Oh, they're great. You know, Bill is just ornery as ever. And Daniela's still my little feminist. And,
right.
Polly's just hanging out.
How's that president of yours?
Oh, that son of a bitch, right? Well, Elliot is not going to. We're not going to talk a lot of politics. We're going to talk about beautiful D.C. in a moment. But
I love that city.
I know.
You know, when I saw Elliot was coming in, I didn't even need to think about what we were going to talk about here because you took me to some of the places around D.C. last time I was there. But I've been drawing maps of Washington D.C. and I can identify a building in D.C. from a drawing or from a picture.
You're better than some people that live there.
I love that place.
I know.
Everything about it is just so beautifully worked out.
It's so much more than politics, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right.
All right, so tell me, what's going on? What's bothering you at home? You've also been involved in...
Oh, my God.
Come on, tell me. Where do you want to start?
Oh, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, you know, I haven't been on your show for a while because, you know, usually, like every month or so, I have a whole list of things I want to bitch about, and I don't even know where to begin. Like, but the poor woman from Puerto Rico, the mayor.
What happened to her?
Oh, he just started going in, you know, and listen, I've been gone.
Did he start throwing T-shirts at people?
Elliot was telling me last night that he was throwing paper towels
into the crowd.
Really?
Yeah, and then there was the stiletto heels with Melania when she got off the plane. And
why is that such a problem?
Oh, come on. She said, I mean, there's millions of people being, you know, displaced from Houston. And
I feel sorry for her.
Because she has to sleep with him. I do, too. No. Yeah. Oh, my God.
No. I'll tell you why. Because this was not in the bargain for her. When she got out of that crate off that shipping container from Slovenia or Slovakia, whichever one it is.
Wherever the hell she's from.
And she got off of there in New York Harbor, and they said to her, yeah, ma'am, we've got your documents here. Someone rich has paid for you to – here we go. And they put her through, and she ran up the streets of New York and went, I am free. She knew she was going to go marry a rich guy, and she would live this New York life and spend most of her time shopping and, you know,
designer clothes.
And she's a beautiful woman, and she's not unintelligent. She speaks more languages than I do. I'll give her all of that credit. But she did not ask to be first lady. She was quite happy, I'm sure, to live a very comfortable life in New York. Her husband would be busy with his businesses and all of this stuff, and she would hardly see him. And when she saw him, maybe they'd have a child or two together, which they've done. And I have no nasty things to say about this little kid Baron that everybody seems to be piling on.
We should leave him out of the equation.
Just a kid.
Absolutely.
But this poor Melania, now she has to go and...
Oh, the poor thing.
She now has to do reading programs for illiterate kids, help them to feed themselves.
Can you imagine?
She's got to go to all these openings. She's got to host a whole bunch of women in the White House. She's got to redecorate some
of
the rooms.
Poor lady.
She must hate it.
Probably.
She wants to go shopping on Fifth Avenue. I'm telling you. She doesn't want to be in Washington.
I do know she was in tears when some of the designers wouldn't dress her any longer.
Because they hate her husband. But they shouldn't take it out on her. She's not a horrible person.
She doesn't have a voice.
No.
I'm waiting for her to have a voice. I just thought it was very interesting.
Well, at least she doesn't have a voice like this. Because Crooked Hillary, she's doing herself no favor. That woman, can't someone just sit her down and explain to her you've lost and now you need to start taking accountability for where you are?
You know, I haven't read her book yet.
Oh, it's horrible. It's called What Happened, right?
Yeah.
It's basically from beginning to end about how everything that's happened to Hillary in the last couple of years is everyone else's fault, not hers.
And she's the victim now.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. And I'm always a product of, do you want to be a victim or do you want to empower yourself?
Right. Well, Hillary's chosen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
It's a shame. And you know, what's scary for a lot of us when we talk about the politics of America is, who is our next person that we're going to bring? Who's going to be in power? We don't have anybody. Who do you think?
George Stephanopoulos.
Oh,
that people like a celebrity. We've found that out in the last election, right?
George Stephanopoulos?
Yeah, yeah. Hang on. He was in the Clinton.
I've actually met him.
He was in the Clinton White House, right?
He was
a spokesman for the.
Yeah,
the,
he was.
He's a smart guy.
Smart little Greek guy, yeah.
Yeah, I think he could be an interesting candidate for the Democrats.
That's
you don't think so?
Well, I mean, that's so random. George
I know.
Stephanopoulos,
you asked
like,
me. Look, I've been thinking about it.
Why have you been thinking about it?
Because I'm trying to solve your problems.
You're trying to solve my
what
problems.
What solutions do you have for our problems?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you've got Zuma and we have Trump.
Yeah. I don't know whether we'd want to swap or you'd want to swap at the moment.
I know.
Both equally
I never thought I'd be in this situation.
Right.
I don't know if Ali Wentworth would be the ideal first lady, but, you know, we'd... Toss it out, maybe, hey, overlook that.
What do you think...
She's very outspoken.
Yeah.
Incredibly outspoken.
So what do you think of South Africa, your 220th time here? Anything changed?
You know I love South Africa. Yeah, I know. It's not all about, again, the politics. It's about people and, you know...
You do love that.
I could move here. I really could. You know that. I've talked to you about that a million
times. Do you
want
to sit in while we talk to Elliot, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure, because you've got some inside Washington. Bring Elliot in here. Let's meet this man. Elliot Ferguson,
he's
the president
wonderful.
And CEO of Destination DC. Let me tell you about this guy quickly. He's spent 26 years in the travel and hospitality industry. He has been leading Destination DC's efforts to generate economic opportunity for the District of Columbia through meetings and tourism, overseeing the organization's convention and tourism sales, marketing, finance, and business development operations. And we're very pleased to have him here this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Ferguson, the president and CEO of Destination DC. How are you, Elliot? It's nice to meet you, man. You know, let me switch on your microphone. It's very rude of me to not have you talk. Give you this introduction. What a place to represent, huh?
Yeah, listening to the conversation that was just taking place, it is interesting right now, but it is a great city, so I appreciate the lead-in that you gave.
No, it is. It's a great place. It's the power capital of the political United States, but it's so much more. It's a cultural capital. It's a place of just beautiful parks and landscapes and buildings and great people. Like, D.C. is probably one of the most integrated places in the U.S.
I totally agree. I mean, you know, a lot of folks think that it's a city with millions of folks that live there, and there are less than 750,000 people that live in Washington. And unfortunately for us, politics, good or bad, just kind of, that's what people think about when they think about coming to Washington, D.C., is taking a picture in front of the White House or in front of the Capitol building. But the thing that I love the most are some of the things you said about Washington is that when you come there, it's just a majestic city. It's pleasing to visit, and it's a surprise to folks that are coming for the first time because they have their perceptions of our destination that are, quite frankly, not the reality.
How long have you been in D.C.?
16 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where were you before?
I was in Atlanta. So I'm originally,
Georgia.
Yeah, in Georgia.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but you I mean, moving to D.C., you know what I love is that thing that happens in spring with all those
cherry blossoms.
Yeah. It's just on such a scale. Like nobody who hasn't been there.
Yeah, who would have thought that
can even imagine it?
Yeah, the gift from the Japanese 106 years ago would have turned into an event that attracts millions of people to Washington for about 4.5 weeks. Only 1 week of actual blossoms, but other things that are taking place during that time frame, which is pretty exciting.
If you think about what D.C. is meant to in terms of the historic events that have taken place there, whether it's inaugurations of presidents, whether it's Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, whether it's these huge monuments to people who died 250 years ago. I mean, this is incredible. To have that amount of history for a place that isn't actually that old in world terms, right?
Yeah, and the thing about the city, and to your point, you know, there's 17 museums in the city that are free, you know, the Smithsonian's. A lot of people think there's just one. And the latest just opened last year, which is basically the African American History Museum, which really ties into the rite of passage up till now in terms of the African American experience in the U.S. The thing about Washington that I love the most is that you can spend a week and a half or more, or come back over and over and over again and continue to learn a lot about things that happen in America and in the world. You know, the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. is amazing.
We're opening. Harrowing.
Museum of the Bible opens in just a month. And
you know, I don't know if I'm in a hurry to get to the Museum of the Bible.
And it's so funny. It's interesting. Yeah, people think that it's, you know, you're going to come in one way and walk out baptized. It's not like that at all. You know, you're going to, it's really the history of the Bible and its influence on the world. And whether you're religious or not.
Oh, hell, you've got to admit that.
Yeah, you can't use the word hell when you say that.
Sorry.
But it's all good.
Oh, yes. Quite
but,
right.
But we're excited because it's going to be free in the city and an amazing new thing for folks to visit.
Well, for you two living there, do you take a lot of this stuff for granted? Because when I think about people coming to Johannesburg or Pretoria or whatever, I think, it's just where I live. You don't appreciate a place when you live in it. You have to be conscious and aware of it the whole time to actually take it in. Do you ever drive to a meeting or you're stuck in traffic and you look around you and you go, wow, I'm in the capital city?
I actually do. I mean, I look and I see, you know, I go across the bridge almost every day and I see the Lincoln Memorial, and I go by the White House, which I've talked to you about, like what's going on in the White House. But the Capitol building, I do. But I really love it when people come to visit me, because that makes me get out, because I do take it for granted. Oh, it's there. Yeah. But every once in a while, Luca Della Robbia, it was an exhibit at the National Art Gallery. I was so excited because I was a student in Florence, and that was my dude. And so, you know, I mean, to be able to just go down the street and see it was amazing. But usually when people visit is when I go and see the new things.
Yeah.
African-American Museum. I went with people that had come
folks
in.
That are visiting. Right. And I feel the same way. The thing about Washington is that, you know, all of us are from somewhere else. You know, you rarely will find a native Washingtonian. They're there. So for those that are listening, we know we love you. But
about 20 of them in Georgetown, right?
Right. And, you know, I live on Capitol Hill, and I drive through the mall, you know, the National Mall every single morning coming to work. And
hate it when they've got events on.
You know, you're used to it. You know, it's one of the things you kind of sign up for when you live in the city, is that you expect world leaders to come through. You expect the president's motorcade to come through from time to time. And it's exciting. You know, I've been there 16 years. I know exactly what to expect, but I also know how to navigate around it. And, right. And the thing that I love the most is when visitors are in the city and they're just enamored to see, you know, a motorcade, no matter who it is, coming through the city. Yeah.
It could be some horrible senator from some
no, but I always say, oh my God, it's the president.
Yeah, you have to tell them,
just to make them feel good, you know?
So for Mabali, who's never been to D.C., you haven't been, right?
Never.
Come.
Would you like to go? I mean,
absolutely.
What would you show her first? Where would you take her?
Well, it's like the point you made about visiting somewhere for the first time. My wife and I honeymooned here 12 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
We did. And I made a decision to come here simply because I wanted to explore. You know, most people think, hey, you want to come and learn the history of a destination. But, you know, I really wanted to come for the fun perspectives of coming to South Africa and going to, you know, Lemon Farm right outside of PE and spending time here in the city, and then, of course, going to Cape Town.
Yeah.
That's the same thing you get when you come to Washington for the first time. You have one expectation, and we always exceed individuals' expectations of our destination, because it's, you know, great sporting events, great nightlife, great clubs, phenomenal restaurants, easy to walk around, and the fact that you can do so many things for free. And the thing that I love the most, we flew into Ghana a couple of days ago, is the number of people coming back with just boxes of stuff that they purchased. And I always joke, and it's like, well, when you come to Washington, you're not spending a lot of money during the daytime on things to do, so that gives you more money to really spend on gifts and other things while you're in the city. It's just a phenomenal place that folks come back like you did and talk about everything, be it the culture, the architecture, or just how great it is as a destination.
Yeah, there are those things, though, that only people who live in Washington know about. It's like in any city anywhere in the world. There's certain stuff that you guys do that you would only have the idea of doing if you had local knowledge, right?
It's nice to know somebody that lives there.
Yeah.
You don't have to, but yeah.
Because there's a little restaurant that you have that you go to, which is,
just like here.
Just slightly off the main sort of tourist drag. And when you go there, you get an authentic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like I loved walking through Georgetown. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just
you
so,
were great
so
having
different.
There. I mean, you kind of made me look at it differently, too, because you were so excited. about being there.
That's the beauty of visitors coming, because for those who live in the city, folks just don't play tourists in their own hometown.
No.
They just don't do it until they have someone visiting.
And the other thing about Washington, you've got all the embassies, you've got universities, you've got theaters and venues for cultural events. I mean, there's a lot going on all the time, right?
Right.
And that's in D.C., but the whole metropolitan area. You know, you have Virginia, you've got Maryland.
Yeah.
We have huge things over there, too. But
no, you're absolutely right.
And Alexandria.
We sell the region as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, we would never compete with the wine country that you have here in Cape, you know, in Johannesburg and in the region. But in Virginia, there's actually a wine country 45 minutes outside of Washington. And it's an incredible area to go and visit. It's also horse country. And you're surprised that you're out of the city in 45 minutes and you're in this incredible rural area that's just majestic. So, you know, we love promoting Washington as a destination, but, you know, be it historic Annapolis or the fact that Baltimore is 45 minutes away, 2 hours and 45 minutes by train to New York City, you know, it's a region that you want to really engage in and go to all those different places, you know, including Washington, of course.
All right, so D.C. itself, it's not a state, it's a district.
That is correct.
So what happened? Maryland and Virginia and who else? Was it just those two? They decided they'd each donate a piece of this land on either side of the Potomac River.
Well, it was more...
How did it work?
I don't know if they decided to donate, but it was more the government's decision to create a space, a plot of land that is not a state, that is neutral for the federal government, the U.S. government, to actually call the capital. So that land was acquired, taken, what have you, years ago.
1790s, somewhere around there.
Early 1700s to create the nation's capital. You know, of course, D.C. was not the first capital, because Philadelphia was the capital for a while, as was New York. Mm-hmm. So this was a neutral zone, if you will, that was created years ago just for the U.S. capital and the federal government.
And they named it after the first president?
Washington, D.C., yes. Also known as the District of Columbia, also known as D.C. So named after George Washington, as is a lot of things in Washington, D.C. and in the U.S.
It's beautiful. Yeah. You've got Arlington National Cemetery there, which is just one of the most breathtaking places, because you just, you know, all the war dead of all the last 150 years of in fact, since the Civil War, right?
Yeah, quite a few, including former presidents. Of course, you know, you have
Kennedy.
President Kennedy and his wife, as well as other dignitaries. So as interesting as it is to visit a graveyard, it is really a memorial to so many that sacrificed their lives or played a huge role in developing the U.S.
Now, you're talking about Washingtonians as these people who kind of are people who've lived there their whole lives, but a lot of the population are from all over the rest of the United States or from all over the world.
You're absolutely right. And in Washington, I consider myself...
You'd hear a different language on every street corner
absolutely.
If you wanted
right.
to.
You know, there are over 185 embassies in the city, so if you can imagine the number of dialects, the cultural exchanges and the restaurants that are there. Native Washingtonians are the most passionate people that I've ever met. You have to literally be born there. You could have lived there for 40 years and they'll never consider you a native.
Exactly.
You're just not good enough.
You're not a native. And I always joke because I was born in Washington State, so I'm a native Washingtonian just on the other part of the U.S.
Yeah.
But they're people that are really passionate about politics, about the history, and the African-American experience in Washington, D.C., which is pretty prevalent for an East Coast city. So it's great to be in that city and just to listen to people talk about the changes that have taken place. And since you've been there last, you know, you talk about Georgetown, which is a phenomenal neighborhood, but one of the things we promote the most are the other neighborhoods that were not necessarily on anyone's radar 10 years ago that now have great shopping, great restaurants. And so when you're back in the city, when you're done hanging out with Debbie, who would want to leave Debbie and her family? I'd love to spend some time with you and kind of share
you my city. Yeah, I got to get back there. I've been to New York a couple of times since then, but I haven't been back to D.C. So how does it change as administrations change? I mean, do you feel the place? I said to Debbie on the phone the other day, a couple of months ago. Yeah. How does the mood change in Washington? Because you've lived through you know, a George H.W. Bush to Clinton to George W. to Obama to Trump, does it have a different feeling when, you know, different people are in the White House? Because the whole society kind of does revolve around who's in the offices in the Senate and who's in the offices in the Congress and who's in the Supreme Court, because it's all right there on your doorstep.
I just remember growing up, and maybe it's because I was so young, but even as a young adult, I don't remember it being so partisan. You know, I mean, it used to be bipartisan. Presidents, whether you were a Democrat or Republican, would put Democrats and Republicans into the cabinet. Mm-hmm. It was very bipartisan. So I think, to me personally, when it became Bush, that's when it became very partisan, and it's us against them. And unfortunately, we're polarized now. You know, we can't make a decision. I literally hate it, but I was at an event the other night. A lot of young kids that were in Congress, you know, they were with their representatives. And you have to, like, sidestep. You don't really know if they're Democrats or Republicans.
And it can mean the end of a conversation,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. But most of the kids I talked to were Democrats, and so we actually could talk. You have to – it definitely is, you know – and Republicans are very quiet, you know. They're not as – you know, it's just, it's different. But we've never had a president like this.
Yeah.
Ellie and I were talking about this last night. We've never had a president like this.
But also, you know, living in the city, the first rule of thumb, we rarely talk politics.
Yeah.
You know, that's usually the perception that we're all wearing suits and talking about what we like or dislike about number 45.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't happen. You know, I live on Capitol Hill, so every 2 years, as senators and congressmen come and go, there's always you can always tell when someone's leaving, clearly, because they lost the election. But then you can always tell when someone that is an elected official moves into your neighborhood, because you see the black car come and pick them up every morning. Living on the Hill, at 6 o'clock in the morning when we're out walking our dogs and picking up dog poop, you know, I know who they are. They don't know who I am, but they know my dog's name. And it's a neighborhood. I mean, you know, you don't really think about the politics in that vein. Here's the irony of what we do as a destination. We're promoting D.C. as a destination, and President Obama was incredible for helping us promote Washington, because he and his wife and family got out to restaurants and really helped showcase the other side of Washington. You know, and in our building, there are two lobbying firms, a Republican lobbying firm and a Democratic lobbying firm. One, Podesta, which is a name mm-hmm. that you all know. It's his ex-wife, who's pretty funny. But, you know, we all cohabitate and mm-hmm. we understand the differences right now there's a lot of interest and interesting things happening because of what's happening with number 45 in Washington, D.C. But we kind of steer clear of it because it's just such a sensitive topic. And Washington as a city is really pro-Democrat. So it's rare that you'll find a Republican in office in Washington, D.C. It's not unlikely, but it's very rare. So, you know, they understand they're the underdogs. And in my impression, I always say you just have to work a lot harder. But from a city living there as a destination, it rarely plays a role in our daily lives.
Tell me about things like Jazz Festival, the D.C. Jazz Festival. You know, these there's so much going on there in terms of events.
Yep.
You can walk down the street any given day and you'll find some concerts on, or there's some performance. There are choirs and there are ballets and there are operas and there are
the Kennedy Center
plays.
Yeah.
It's just incredible, right?
You're absolutely right. And the thing that I love the most about the city, and I challenge especially the younger folks that are coming to the city and they don't have a lot of cash, is if you go to our website, washington.org, or you just look in Friday's paper, if you still get a newspaper, and look at all the free concerts mm-hmm. and all the activities you can do without actually spending money. You know, I talked about monuments, memorials, and museums being free in the city, but from the Jazz Festival, which was just a few months ago, which is an incredible festival that brings artists from all over the world, and not only during the jazz festival, but just last weekend, you know, the Japanese embassy, the ambassador opened his home for a Japanese jazz artist, and suddenly the jazz festival is year-round with artists coming from different countries with the jazz festival in the embassies, which is something you can only do in Washington. One of my favorite things to do in the city is an event called Passport DC, mm-hmm. which takes place in the month of May. And as you can, if you can imagine, all the African embassies are many of them opening their doors on a weekend. And, you know, when you're in an embassy,
you're in that
country, and, you know, you're experiencing the food, the music, the culture overall. And then you're going to the next African embassy and you're continuing on in that experience without ever leaving Washington. And then the next weekend might be the European Union embassies. So, and these things are free.
It's like you could travel the world without having to leave the city.
Absolutely.
You took the words out of my mouth, and this is all free.
I reckon for a lot of South Africans, that could actually be a way to see the rest of this continent, because God knows a lot of South Africans don't travel to the rest of Africa, and we're missing out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big...
There's
problem.
A lot of Americans that don't travel, too. Yeah.
Well, they travel inside the U.S.,
right.
but they rarely travel outside
right.
of the U.S., to your point. But why is it that there are so few Africans that travel to other countries in Africa?
South Africans, we think we're special.
Yeah, we suffer from a bit of a superiority complex when it comes to the rest of the continent.
Ah.
There's also a lot of ignorance
right.
for other African countries.
And also, there's this thing that has happened, and it's been going on for 100 years, but whenever people talk about Africa, they talk about the whole continent. They don't, because they don't want to get into specifics, because there's a huge difference between
Absolutely.
Kenya and Nigeria.
Absolutely.
And between South Africa and Chad. We have nothing in common with Chad. We've probably got more in common with Sweden than with Chad, but because it's all in one landmass, people just lump it all together.
Yeah.
And also, I think there's a kind of an implied... maybe it's a generalization, a stereotyping, even a racism. It's like just because there are black people, they must all be the same sort of countries.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the world looks at it. And in this country, I think South Africa's got this, like Mabale says, this superiority complex. We think somehow that we, because we're infrastructurally a little bit ahead, and because we have the story of South Africa's democracy, and we've got...
You feel a bit more superior.
This mixed population. Yeah, we feel like we're mm-hmm. special in some way. But actually, we're not special. It's a huge continent. I mean, we apparently you could fit the United States in here 3 times.
Yeah.
And you'd still have space left over.
That's true. Well, we say the same thing about Americans. You know, less than 40% of Americans actually have passports. So they are traveling to other regions of the U.S., and some feel that they don't have a need to travel outside of the U.S. And, you know, as I promote Washington as a destination, I do promote, you know, global travel. And because, you know, you just, you know, the things you learn, you talked about Washington being laid out architecturally by a Frenchman, you know, going to France and understanding the culture and being in that environment, you just gain a different perspective on world politics. You know, as you all were talking about some of those things earlier, my first visit here 12 years ago versus my visit 4 years ago, I learned a lot more about this country. And, you know, it is more westernized than a lot of the other African countries. However, you know, to your point, you know, our time in other countries, and this trip to Ghana, which was a very short visit, but I travel so much, I know how to absorb things really quickly. That's what people miss when they're just, you know, just decide that they're just going to stay in the U.S. or stay in South Africa.
It promotes tolerance, too.
Yeah, it does. It
opens you up.
And an understanding of the different cultures mm-hmm. that not all black people are the same or not all white people are the same. And, you know, if you stay in one location, you're going to have a skewed vision of the world.
Absolutely.
Now, you're here for the first time in, what, 4 years, you said?
Yeah, about 4 years, yeah.
Okay, so what do you think of the place now? I mean, what's changed for you as a tourist?
It continues, you know, I think the first time I visited here, and I'm pretty well-traveled enough to not ever feel uncomfortable, there was always this concern about safety. You know, you don't want to go here, you don't want to go there by yourself. And, you know, my wife, you know, we were talking yesterday about how I met a guy in the mall as we were staying at the Rose Bank.
Rose Bank.
There was a guy working in the mall. And he says, "Hey, I'd like to take you guys on a tour." My wife, I came back and said, "Hey, we're going with these people I met." She freaked out. "What? We're doing what?"
Yeah,
we're going where?
By the way, those are not normally the dangerous ones.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, from the perspective of her not ever coming here, and everyone just making a point of it not being, you know, just want to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, but we had a phenomenal experience, and I think that as I've come the last three or four times, there still are concerns, but people are feeling, you feel a lot more welcomed and more comfortable walking and being around the city as a whole. So it's a lot of growth, a lot of development, and where we're staying now, it's existed for a long period of time, but it's a phenomenal property and a part of the city that is really beautiful. So.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, I've been doing this now for 10 years, coming to South Africa, and I see a big difference in Johannesburg and the reputation of, you know, it not being safe. That is starting to, you know, I this is what I tell people. You know, oh, is it safe? Is any place safe?
No.
I mean, there's places in Washington, D.C.
People in Vegas a week ago thought they were going to have a good time.
You know, Paul and Bill and my brother were just there celebrating Paul's birthday. I mean,
and I'm going there on Monday. So.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So you have to be street smart.
Yep.
You know, if a concierge tells you not to go in an area, don't go. Or if someone says, you know, that's not really a cool area, don't do it. And then be surprised if something happens. You don't do it.
But people seem to lose their minds when they travel, too. Oh, I can handle this.
Yeah.
Right.
So thank you very much, Elliot. And thank you, Debbie. It's always nice
to
see the both of you. And we'll check in Washington next time.
Yes, and you guys come on over.
Absolutely.
I am going to accept that invitation.
All right. Get my butt out of here.
I've already booked one of your rooms in your house, whether you offered or not.
Yeah,
going to
everybody's
land.
In my house. Absolutely, one more won't.
It won't
matter.
Land and phone you and Sam here.
Yeah.
I got the metro right across the street.
Elliot says you could get all the concerts and you can go to all these museums and all that stuff for free. So. And there's good public transport in Washington, too, so you don't have to shell out huge amounts of money.
You see where we live.
You
see where we live.
And you can stay with Debbie for free, Mubs. Yeah. All you have to do is organize your air travel.
It's a deal.
I've got all the rest, so we'll take good care of all of you when you come over. So.
Beautiful.
Great.
All right, well, thank you so much for spending some time with us, guys, and we'll see you in D.C. CliffCentral.com